The Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by Sphero. These are the droids you're looking for. Control R2-D2, BB-8, and BB-9E with your smart device. Watch the Star Wars films together, explore holographic simulations, and so many more fun times. All available at a brand new lower price at Sphero.com/Star Wars. Get a free force band with any order while supplies last, and be sure to use code StarWarsReport10 for an extra 10% off.
This week's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over on patreon.com/StarWarsReport.
You see, how'd you guys let me beat you on that one? Come on. There's no liars in this game, just players.
The seat taken?
Nobody's in the seat, then I ain't taken, friend.
So this is, Sabacc?
Sabacc.
Lock. Got it.
You played before?
A couple times, yeah.
Captain Lando Calrissian.
Han Solo.
Looks like you're having a good day.
I'm a lucky guy.
Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?
Anything, Han.
It's Han, but that's okay. I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me, it's true.
Let's do the show, folks.
Gum, gum, gum.
And who might you be?
It's the Star Wars Report.
Star Wars Report.
Woo! Star Wars Report. The place for Star Wars news, features, interviews, and more.
Then we can do something epic.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate.
The Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
Solo, a Star Wars story, is out in theaters, and we've all seen it, and that's what we're going to talk about. It's in cinemas, came out May 25th, came out the night of May 24th, advanced screenings, and we've all seen it. Coming up later on the show, we're going to have Mark Herlihman, Michael Morris, and Christy Morris join us to talk about their feelings on Solo, a Star Wars story. And I'm Bruce Gibson, and with me to discuss Solo, a Star Wars story is Scott Rifen. How you doing, Scott?
I'm super fantastic. How are you, sir?
I am doing super fantastic, too, because I've seen Solo and I'm excited about it. I'm glad we can finally talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Been waiting and waiting and waiting. Now, did you get to see it early, or was last night your first time?
I saw it early at a press screening last week, and then I saw it again last night, Thursday night, on the official premiere early screening night, or whatever you call that. So you saw it. When's the first time you saw it? You saw it Thursday night?
Thursday night. I saw it. Yeah. Actually, weird day for me because I was in, I got called to iHeart regional meetings in Palm Coast, Florida, which were supposed to end at 4, and they never end on time. And then I had to drive back to Brunswick and then host a trivia night and then go see the movie. So it was a long, long day, but I did make it. I was not going to miss it.
Yes, and we're recording, if anybody hasn't noticed already, we're recording here on Friday, May 25th, and you just saw it again, a second time.
Yes.
Because you're at the theater as we speak.
I am actually, yeah, they allowed me, the fine folks at Georgia Theater Company allowed me to set up my equipment here. So I just went ahead and brought a backpack with everything. And the second the credits started rolling, I ran down to an area that I knew there wouldn't be a lot of people in and plugged in and set up, and I'm ready to go.
There you go.
So this is literally just walking out of my second screening.
Dang. That's amazing.
And then, of course, as you can hear, Riley Blanton's at not a theater, but you're in an airport.
Live from a stairwell in the Austin Bergstrom International Airport. How's it going, Bruce?
It's going great. I'm glad that we could get you in here before you get on the flight.
Yeah, literally, my flight is scheduled to take off in like 45 minutes. So I'm here for like the next half hour. But of course, you know me. We got to be here for the initial reaction episode. Unlike, I guess I'm a worse fan than both of you. I've only seen it the one time, opening night last night. No special privileges or press screenings in San Angelo, Texas, where I'm currently stationed. So I just went and saw it with all the plebes, right? All right, Mr. Fancy Bruce. But actually, it was kind of a fun experience because I went with a bunch of other second lieutenants and got a couple recordings of instant reactions that I'm sure Bruce will be playing later in the show. But it was a very fun, experience, and I'm sure we're going to dig in here. And I guess it's fair to say spoiler warnings are
yes,
about to be
I'm glad you
out,
mentioned
right?
that. This is going to be filled with spoilers.
The ground rules were.
The ground rules are there are new rules because if anybody's listening to this right now who has not seen Solo and doesn't want to hear spoilers, stop. Leave.
Exactly.
Bye. Here's the door.
We're having an L3 style revolution against spoilers, and we're just spoiling it all.
Wow.
Yes. So dig right in, and it's very fresh in Scott's mind, just coming out, seeing it a second time, and Riley saw it last night. So why don't you tell us, Riley, what were your thoughts about this movie before you went to go see it? Where were you coming from?
That's the real question. And I've talked about this on the show in the last couple months, but I've never approached a Star Wars movie with my arms crossed so hard. Like, just like, I don't know about this whole thing. I was very skeptical that I liked this movie because, and I'm going to repeat what I said on the show several times, but just to fully illustrate the level of my skepticism, my worry for this film was that it would not dig into the character arc of Han Solo and how he became the cynic that we know. But instead, I was more concerned that it would become what I've described as a PowerPoint presentation of nostalgia, of like every single line Han Solo ever says in the original trilogy. It's just like, here's that. You can see it now. Here's the Kessel Run. Hey. And it did have some of that. Mm-hmm. But much to my joy, there's one moment at the end of the movie that I'm going to start with, so this is why I'm glad you gave the spoiler warning, Bruce. The moment where I appreciated that, like, they went there, they had a complete arc for the character of Han Solo, was in two moments in quick succession where he kills Beckett and Kira betrays him. And I'm just going straight there because that's the moment in this movie, like, they did it. That's what I wanted from a Han Solo movie. And it explains, it's not just a kitschy little, oh, he shot first. It's a real meaningful moment of how he's changed from what I really kind of describe as an almost Jimmy Stewart type of character, you know, this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, optimistic, dashing hero at the beginning to the more cynical Han Solo that we know from A New Hope. And that was the moment that this film really hit home for me, and I absolutely loved it.
Well,
with
that's
my
quibbles, awesome.
And I'm sure we'll get into them, but that, I loved it overall.
Well, I know you loved it because after you saw it last night, you called me and told me, and I was giving you low expectations, having already seen it a week earlier, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, because I wanted you to go in with low expectations on this, but I have no idea where Scott is on this.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear, Scott, because you're the freshest of us right off the second viewing. Your thoughts?
Yeah. And I'm the old guy. Well, Bruce is an old guy, too. Never mind. We're both old guys. You know, I'll say this. I thought it was yesterday when I was at my iHeart Regionals at lunch, they had these cookies. And nobody could resist these cookies because the cookies were completely full of chocolate. They were perfectly warm. They were perfectly melty. And of course, they were sickeningly sweet. And this movie kind of reminded me of one of those cookies. Just a big glop of fan service, which was not a... That's not a criticism of it. It's just, I almost had a sugar high from how much fan service they were feeding us throughout the course of the thing, because a ton of it. As far as Solo's art goes, yeah, it was nice. I don't think it, I'll say this. The biggest problem I had with the movie overall was the Infus Nest reveal.
That's so funny.
We didn't earn that reveal. And
holy
that
cow.
Kind of bothered
it's like
me.
Like you're reading my
that.
Mind.
What, you were hoping it was Mace Windu under there?
Well, no, I wanted some kind of a setup to have that payoff mean something, and it kind of turned into a first act again when she took the mask off.
It did. It's interesting because, like, I know, well, and again, I'm going to give this sort of broad warning, something that's really hard to do when you're talking about a Star Wars movie for the first time, and it applies to this podcast as much as it does every other new movie we've discussed. It's really hard not to jump off with the quibbles, because that's the things you don't like. It's the easiest place to start.
Yeah.
Rather than like, that was cool. Well, cause you, that was cool.
Yeah, there's just kind of that assumption that, yes, we loved everything. Now let's talk about this.
Well, and so, and that's the weird thing, because the very beginning of this movie, when, well, at least the part, I guess not the very beginning, but certainly in the first act when we're introduced to Beckett and Val, her death is means something. And it, and it's, and that sacrifice is so impactful. Also, who killed her? Right? It's Envy's Nest in the gang. So by the end, not only was it kind of not earned, it was kind of weird. It was like the, there's this big triumphant music and they've like told you that her home world was taken over, or her parents were killed. But like, you have no empathy for that specific character. And that was fortunately, like, if that were the big victory, if that were the, I guess, the crux of the final act of the film, that would have made the film a lot less digestible for me.
Yes, but, I'm glad that it wasn't about that, but
yeah.
But it did kind of take over part of the third act, and it kind of made me go, wait a minute, what? Why are we, why is this happening all of a sudden?
Yeah, the strength, unfortunately, like, it was paired up against the strength of the subplot, or I guess the primary plot of Beckett's lesson, right? Mm-hmm. The trust no one, which Beckett, is what's so poetic about it is he's the old one who ultimately has to learn that the hard way.
He failed on a lot of his people are predictable. He failed on that one as well. He failed on trust no one. He failed on a lot of his lessons. He went to his grave realizing were not exactly accurate.
Yeah, no, it's exactly. Bruce, we haven't heard from you.
Well, I was just processing what you were saying. I mean, the Envy's Nest reveal, I guess I liked it because it wasn't a big surprise or reveal of somebody that we knew. I kind of liked it introducing something new to Star Wars. It's like the start of the rebellion, or seeing this group that's kind of off to the side that is that piece that's going to take us to the rebellion and set some things up. And it, I guess what I'm saying is I didn't expect it to be this young girl. And so it really kind of was different.
Well, you know, and it's interesting you say that you were happy that it wasn't this big reveal of something, but the problem to me was that they treated it like it was that kind of a reveal. And so
I was like, the way the music grows and everything, I was like, well, maybe she's his daughter, or like, maybe there's.
Well, see, maybe that's for me, because I never suspected, like, I didn't even know if we would get a reveal. I just thought this was like a bad guy.
I didn't either. And that's why I was kind of shocked that all of a sudden there was this reveal. It was kind of like, why? I didn't feel we earned it. That's all. I didn't think it was earned through the story.
But you know, it was earned. I do want to talk about, cause I know, again, I hate to rush you guys, jump in more and more as after I have to bolt, but, in the next like 10 or 15 minutes, we have to talk about, I think probably the two strongest, I guess, supporting threads. It's hard to, the sort of Han Solo's character arc is tied close to Kira and Beckett. And I really liked both of those, particularly the idea of, the debt that Kira owes Beckett, and the way that we haven't seen anything portrayed like that in a Star Wars film before. And but there's certainly been like the idea of the vile gangster Jabba the Hutt. We see some of that in Return of the Jedi, but this was almost more sinister because it's not as overt, but you just have the small brand and the ring and how that that we get the sense slowly throughout the movie that something's changed about Kira, that she's been poisoned. She even tells Han this, that she's not the person he knew, and Han's unwilling to listen to her own, you know, trying to communicate that. But that's what made it, it just sort of made sense that it's weird that what Dryden Voss had basically poisoned her to the point where she embraced the very thing that you would think she would hate most at the very end of the film. And that's something that's a little more complex and a little more thought-provoking than I would typically think of as a Star Wars movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there's a certain moral ambiguity there, and it's almost one of the themes they tried to play into in Last Jedi, but I thought they handled it better here.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
Anybody can be on any side at any time, and maybe, you know, maybe good and evil are constructs.
Yeah, I'm not the good guy. I'm not the good guy.
Or I'm not the bad guy.
Good guys, bad guys.
I mean, I couldn't even tell you where Kira is at this moment, if she's a bad guy or a good guy at this point. I mean,
and she's got a little of each.
Yeah. There's that shades of gray again.
I really, interesting, because I kind of lost sympathy for her as a character at the end of the film. I don't know if that was any of y'all's reaction, but
I did. I figured she's caught into something that she didn't want to be in. But she's stuck.
But remember, one of the things she says is it's not, you know, about living and all that. It's about staying in the game as long as you can.
Right.
And so that's what she's not trying to do a right or noble thing. She's trying to stay afloat.
Yeah.
You have to play both sides just to stay afloat.
Well, yeah, I guess you could see it that way, because that's a big choice at the end, because she's like, I'm right behind you.
Yeah, you can't see it that way. I'm telling you, I see it that way. It can be done.
I guess what I'm trying to say
is, I know what you're saying.
I definitely sort of got a sense of betrayal in that moment, but that I thought was that was kind of a bold character direction. Because if it were like, I guess there could have been a more sappy version of it where, you know, they played off like tragic music and she's like, I'm no longer the person, I can't be with you anymore. And he's sad and she's sad and then they leave. That would have been, I think that would have been too easy.
If she were fully irredeemable, though, she would have just let him, she wouldn't have let him go.
That is true. That's a good point. Yeah.
And she did.
I guess we'll have to wait and see what the box office is this weekend to see if they go along for that sequel. We'll see.
You know, they could, and I wouldn't complain. I would line up for it.
I have to have a sequel at this point. Even both times watching, I left there saying, I need to know more. I need to know what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And not just with Han Solo, but especially with Kira. And that other reveal that happened somewhere with her at the end.
Well, I thought this was a spoiler full zone. I thought we could do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny. At the end, when they show that figure, I turned to my wife and I said, gosh, that sounds like Peter Serafinowicz. Peter Serafinowicz sounds like, you know, he's the voice of Darth Maul. And then all of a sudden they made the reveal it was Maul. And then I go in the credits and it ain't Serafinowicz.
Nope, it's Sam Witwer.
It's Witwer.
Yeah.
I'll brag a little bit on my ear. I heard it, but I recognized Sam Witwer right off. And I immediately knew the second I heard it, oh, there he is. That's the voice. And so I knew it was coming. I kind of saw the metallic legs, but there's like this 14-year-old kid next to me who literally just started chair dancing. The second he saw it, it's like, that's so cool. But like of the group I saw it with, the lieutenants, some were bigger nerds and had seen Clone Wars and Rebels. And there was one who hadn't. And I was really interested to see, like, that's his first time learning dudes live. And he was super intrigued. He's like, well, what happened? I want to know the story there. And I'm like, well, there is one. You can go find it on Netflix.
But you know what's interesting is that no matter how many declarations of what's canon Disney or Lucasfilm will make, there are a lot of people who, if it ain't in a film, it didn't happen. Right. So now this is in a film.
Yeah, and I heard when I was at the press screening, because it's a smaller audience, when the lights come up, everybody just hangs around and talks to each other, and I'm hearing people saying, you know, how's this possible? How can Maul be in this? And then other people are like, you're not watching Clone Wars? You're not watching Rebels? No, I don't watch cartoons. And then they had to explain what's going on, and I did get concerned. I thought, is this really going to confuse general audiences, and they're going to walk away like even thinking that this is taking place before The Phantom Menace?
And then they say, no, I don't watch cartoons. Boy, did you catch The Simpsons last night? They were great. Wait a minute, what?
Wait. Exactly. We ping-ponged all over the place. Kessel Run, that was awesome. You know, the other thing that I think was interesting was the way this film balanced the over-the-top turn-to-camera like nods and the more subtle, hey, you're the one who killed Ara Singh, you know, like small references for the fans versus the, they don't serve our kind here. Get it? Get it?
Yeah, it's but like, see, I liked that. I really liked that because that's
really?
the they don't serve our kind here. I did like because it's a theme that when the Marvel guys, particularly Archie Goodwin in the early days, they didn't have a lot of threads to pull. That was a thread they pulled from, and it created some great moments in those early Marvel comics. So to see them kind of going back into that territory, now I was really excited about it.
Hmm. Yeah, well, and it played, to be fair, that line itself, while in my opinion a little clunky, it did play into L3's really over-the-top character. That's the other thing, is the dynamic between L3 and Lando, they went far. Like the outright sort of sexual tension that they built up. But in a way, to me, when I was first watching it, it was really rubbing me the wrong way. Like, they're really pushing this concept far. Because, like, I never think of Star Wars as the, you know, Westworld. Let's do a deep thought on, you know, droids versus, you know, self-awareness and that sort of thing. But
see, I would have gone with Flesh Gordon, but yeah.
But like, no, point be, like, they reference it for sure. Like, we don't serve their kind here in the original trilogy, but it's never really dug into. And yeah. So it started off so strong that I thought, man, they're really digging in deep, but they ultimately had a reason for it when you had the L3's sacrifice and integration into the Falcon. And to me, that paid off well enough to where the setup made sense that they were playing the more, I guess, serious side of the kind of question of consciousness that we all think about ourselves when we watch a Star Wars movie, but usually the Star Wars movie itself doesn't play into that much.
Well, but again, as you mentioned, though, they did put those seeds in there in Episode 4, and Archie Goodwin did a great example. Is a great example of kind of pulling those threads or sowing those seeds, if you will, with the Valance the Hunter storyline that ran throughout, well, I'll tell you, issues 16, 27, and I think 29 of the original Marvel series. If you have your Marvel Unlimited app, it's free on there. And if you want to go pick them up on Comixology, go for it. So,
dang, the man knows his issues.
I know. That's incredible.
Did I say 17? I'm sorry, 16. 17 is Crucible. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought. Oh, he's wrong.
16, 27, and 29. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. What else? I guess, who else are we missing?
Lando. Right? We haven't talked about Lando, I thought, of course, we all probably went in expecting a great portrayal by Donald Glover of this, and so I think he lived up to the hype.
I think so. And it was I was expecting the straight, suave Lando, and that L3 dynamic really added a dimension to his character that wasn't there in the original trilogy, and worked, because that's where Donald Glover's and that's where his dramatic chops come in. Because if you've seen the series he wrote and acted and directed in the Atlanta series, some of the other stuff he said, he is a really capable dramatic actor. And so I was kind of hoping that would be used, and it certainly was. And also, like, the idea of him cheating on the game of Sabacc on Han, that was a fun little.
I know, love that scene. I love that scene. Is this Sabacc? No, Sabacc. I'm Han. Oh, Han. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Total kind of James Bond yet underworld moment. And that's, you know what, we saw the criminal world of Star Wars in a way we've never seen it before. And I loved it. Like, we didn't even see the Empire other than their recruiting station.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that part too. Yeah, I liked the recruiting station and then how they got separated by trying to board the bus or the train or tram or whatever it is, and they got separated. And
yeah.
Yeah, all that was interesting.
Well, we also got to see a good old-fashioned Old West train heist, which was, I thought, really well executed.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because it was so prevalent to me in the advertising and in the TV spots and the trailers and everything. I really thought that was going to be kind of the central set piece towards the finale of the film, and that was early. When they knocked that out early, I kind of went, wow, okay, where are they going now?
Yeah, what's left?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. So, like, that's the other thing, is the structural, the pace of this film stays pretty fast. There's, like, I want to say in my brain, I remember being like two or three slower spots, but it maintains its pace pretty well.
Yes.
And but it's the finale that's kind of certainly different than any of the other new Star Wars films, because there isn't this, and this is a little easy to ape, but the sort of original Star Wars, everything comes together to a single moment, and then there's a release. And whether that's Rogue One.
Yeah. Traditionally you have the intercutting between usually two or three, usually three different planes of action at once during a finale, and we didn't see that this time.
Mm-mm, no. So what did you guys think of the whole Kessel Run? I mean, I think we're expecting they're going to refer to the Kessel Run and incorporate this in the story, but did you like how they did that?
Didn't mind it.
Yeah, I didn't. That's one of those things I didn't really have expectations for, because there was nothing I was particularly married to from the old materials. So I liked it, and I liked the gravity well that added that little extra bit of tension there, and it suddenly made sense how you could make the Kessel Run less than, quote unquote, ground down, less than 12 per sex.
Because you can't make it in 20.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Exactly. But the other thing that I think the Kessel Run, it wasn't the central thrust of the film either. And I liked that they didn't make that build the film around that.
Yeah. In the first 30 minutes, he didn't set out to conquer the Kessel Run. And so
Yeah, it's not like this movie is called Han Solo and the Kessel Run.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, and I'm trying to think of the... Oh, that's the other thing that I really liked was just sort of the...
The music.
Well, I do like the music, but... Oh, I like the main theme.
The main theme.
The solo theme?
Yeah.
Here's my only beef with it. I thought it was nice, but it is too similar to Poe's theme.
Oh, that is true. It is very. I didn't even think about
very
that.
Very similar to Poe's theme.
Yeah. Well, the suite. So I just literally, it literally came out today. So I just played it a couple times on my Spotify on the road trip out here to Austin. I guess I didn't even explain that on the beginning of like why I'm at the airport. I'm going out to Disney, hooray! But that's another thing. the what's it called?
I just saw Han Solo movie. What are you going to do next? I'm going to Disneyland.
Exactly. I liked it. The full suite adds a lot more around that sort of main thrust, but the sort of recurring victorious moment that is played a whole lot in the film is very similar. Now that I think about it. But I haven't really got a chance to dig deep into the soundtrack, which, of course, you guys know me. I will.
Yeah, and see, I'll just go ahead and tell you, coming out of that score-wise, I enjoyed it, and I did. I liked it, and I liked, again, a ton of fan service in it. But what I wish was they had employed David Collins as a consultant, because there were times when there were cues that were, in my opinion, you know, the callback cues that were completely misplaced.
Like the asteroid run?
Well, the asteroid, I'm okay with the asteroid run when they first showed that Starstruck.
It was a little on the nose, a little direct.
Yeah. No, that's true. But I mean,
but I liked it.
But when they first show the Star Destroyer, they play the Death Star theme, the Death Star's motif. They play the Rebels motif a lot when it's not necessarily called for. The main title they do play throughout the film, and it's not really a Luke Skywalker film.
Because I always attribute that theme to Luke Skywalker or the Force, and that didn't it seemed out of place at times.
Yeah,
the beginning, both the beginning motif as the non-crawl comes on, and then the build up to the hyperspace and exit, both use a variation of that Rebels fanfare the Rebel fanfare, and it's I liked it, but you definitely did notice that, and what's the word I'm looking for? It's very kind of straight on score where there wasn't a lot of counter score, unusual score, with the exception of the NP's Nest.
That kind of choral, well, not really choral, kind of a wailing.
Yeah.
It was good sound. I mean, it was perfect. It was great for the scene.
It would have been more meaningful if there was sort of some kind of, I don't know, in-universe reason for it, or a reference to like a culture that we understood or knew in some way that we could identify with. Where,
in other words, had the reveal been earned.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to stop on that. I got to leave on a nice note, though. I'm not going to pick on that. But I will say my one kind of last thing is the structure of the film and the pace. The thing that I think, after talking to you guys, that I didn't really think about initially is the sort of, it really did capture the sort of lived-in Star Wars-y feel with the design and the different planets and everything. I just really liked Corellia and everything about Kessel, and I really felt like it. The frame was so full. You're always wondering, I wonder what else is out there. I wonder, even the verbal references to Ara Sing or the Pike Clan or things like that. It just is a very rich universe, visually speaking. I have to credit Ron Howard and the production people, who I think more than any other, I'd say that more than Rogue One, certainly more than The Last Jedi and Force Awakens, this really captured that. And on that, I literally just heard the last boarding call. I'm out of here, gents. I'm not going to miss my flight, but we'll be talking more, and I'll let you guys continue. Appreciate it, guys.
Safe travels.
Thanks for joining us. Safe flying.
Thank you for riding Delta. Bye-bye.
That's a plug for Delta. Delta is the official airline of the Star Wars Report.
I was unaware of that. Wow. You guys have moved into the big leagues. And boy, are my arms tired.
Yeah. Woo. Phew, flying, flying, flying. You know, one character we have not talked about that is one of the most legacy characters that we're going to find in this film outside of Han Solo is Chewbacca.
Sure. Absolutely.
So how did you like the reveal of how they met as the Beast?
See, here you go again. There are a lot of wonderful things to say about this movie. I didn't mind the reveal. Again, it does fly in the face of the old Marvel stuff, unfortunately. but not a bad reveal. I'm not a fan of his speaking Wookiee. And again, I think it goes back to old materials. In Solo at Star's End, there's a character named Reckon who can speak Shriwook. And that is kind of a revelation because it is so difficult. And supposedly Reckon is one of the few humans who can actually speak it. And so for him to just kind of dash out, yeah, I know a little some. Here you go. It also, to me, flies a little bit in the face of the character that we established, because there are a lot of great jokes throughout the whole thing where Solo's trying to appear very worldly and experienced, and they keep calling him out on it, where he doesn't really know a lot about the universe. And then for him to suddenly know that, it didn't ring right to me. Overall, not a bad scene.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way when it happened. I thought it was a little odd for Han Solo to speak Wookiee. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, he's always understood what Chewbacca has said, so he mm-hmm. understands the language.
Yes.
Which I always assumed was something that he learned over time by being around Chewbacca. But now I've learned, okay, he knows this language before he meets Chewbacca. So I guess it would make sense he can speak it. But like you said, I mean, with the human tongue in the mouth, I just think it would be sound odd to a Wookiee when a human tries to speak it.
Well, it's just interesting because they paid two homages, at least that I counted, to the L. Neil Smith Lando trilogy by mentioning Ossian and the Star Caves. But it seems like you'd want to pay some tribute to that Daily trilogy that to me was just, you know, again, when you're a kid and it's 1979, Marvel Star Wars and Brian Daley's books and Splinter of the Mind's Eye are Star Wars.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking of the Brian Daley novels, did you see the skull that's on the third novel that he released?
I did see that in Voss's chambers, which, by the way, can I ask the question of, is it a common last name, Dryden Voss, or is he related to Quinlan in some way?
I don't know. Maybe there is a relation there. I mean, there's got to be more Vosses, but why would they pick Voss?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd think there'd be some significance to it, but it could be, you know, like Antilles or Smith, I suppose.
I guess so. Well, we have to get Smith and Jones and Antilles and all these things in the Star Wars universe.
Yes, yes.
So who did you see the movie with?
Last night I saw it with my wife and my son, and today I was all by my lonesome because I took the day off from work.
Okay, so your wife and son saw it. Are they big Star Wars fans? Where do they fall into
this? Well, they're in my house, and that means they are bombarded with it every day, whether they want to or not.
Sounds like my house.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, my wife is a gamer. I mean, when I go to Celebration, I have to buy tickets for everybody. You know, she doesn't go, well, I'm going to stay home while you do that thing. She's right there with me for every second of Celebration, and he is too. So, you know, obviously they have a certain degree of passion for it.
Okay, and did they like the movie? What were their thoughts?
I think she did. My son actually had a few quibbles with it, which surprised me. I don't think he was in love with the movie. One of the things that I thought was interesting, because, you know, Riley talked about the pacing being pretty solid, and I agree with that. He was complaining about the pacing afterwards, and on the way out of the parking lot, we were arguing because I kept saying, I didn't really perceive a lot of slow spots in this film. I mean, it seemed to kind of pick up and move at all times. And he kept saying, nope, there are a lot of places. It was the pacing. So I don't know. I don't know what he was looking for. He's 20. I'm 47. Maybe I just enjoy a slower pace of life. I don't know. But he had some quibbles with the pacing, which surprised me.
That is interesting, because this even takes me back to The Last Jedi. I've heard people say, it was just too slow. And then I hear other people say, it was just too fast, too much action. And I'm like, how can you have two different perspectives of one being too slow and being too fast? It's almost like the dress. Is it yellow or blue kind of thing? You know,
has to be a part of your expectations.
Yes. Now, who's that behind you? Is there somebody that just walked in?
I don't know.
Okay, I just wondered. Because I was going to ask her if she's a big Star Wars fan.
No, she was getting napkins. I told you, I'm at the movie theater.
This is the first time we've ever had somebody get napkins here on the Star Wars Report.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, you know, it takes all kinds.
And then, of course, did you catch Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother?
Well, of course. Yes. So the droid fighting scene. Yes.
Was there any eruption from the audience? Because the first time I saw it, there was a lot of laughter when he came on. But then when I saw it with the general public, there really wasn't a reaction to that.
Thursday night crowd, no. And Friday crowd, no. No, neither crowd, really. Well, a Friday, I mean, today at 12:30, really, not much of a crowd because, well, it's a holiday weekend. It hasn't really kicked off for a lot of people just yet, or hadn't by the 12:30 screening. So, no, not a lot of response there. I mean, I saw it. I appreciated it. But there wasn't a big hoot from the crowd. I also thought I caught Anthony Daniels' voice during the rebellion scene, but nobody else seemed to have.
I heard that his voice is in there.
He's credited.
Yeah, but I think maybe I didn't catch it the first time, but I was looking for it the second time. I think I caught it, but I wasn't sure if it was really him or not.
Sure it was. I'll tell you, I had my eyes closed for half a second during that last night when I first heard it, and I thought, well, maybe 3PO was in there joining the rebellion, and because I swore I heard the voice. And I asked my wife, was 3PO there? She said, I didn't see him. I said, okay. And then today, when that moment came up again, I had looked away. So I still don't know what the droid looked like, but I will swear he was playing a droid in that rebellion scene.
There was a droid that was a more humanoid droid. Wasn't this like C-3PO, but was humanoid. I kept wondering if he was in that costume or at least contributed the voice to it. I don't know.
I think I heard his voice in that scene, but I guess we'll find out over time.
You think we'll watch it again and again?
yeah, that's kind of what we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
I also, if I can bounce back to the music for just a second, I loved the recruiting video where they actually, you know, it's one of those things they've been doing on the internet for a while, taking some of these minor key movie scores and themes and putting them in a major key to kind of happy them up a little. And I don't know if you noticed that or not, but that's what they did with the Imperial March in that recruitment video. They took the Imperial March and put it in a major key so that it's happy and triumphant instead of ominous and oppressing.
And we had that in Rebels, too, with the Imperial Parade. There was a parade celebrating the Empire Day, and they played it like that.
See, I haven't seen as much of Rebels as I need to, obviously.
Yes, well, you'll have to check that out now.
I've got them, but I haven't watched them, so I got to do that, I suppose. I was also happy to see the little R2KT cameo.
Okay, so I missed that. I was watching it. I had Christy Morris next to me yesterday, and she said, oh, did you see her? And I was like, no, I thought I saw a yellow R2 unit, and
very early.
Oh, okay, so maybe I missed it.
It's very early. I think it's still, if my brain's working right, I think it's still on Corellia where she shows up. I think
R2KT is the droid that's pink. Looks like an R2 unit. It's pink. And it was for a girl named Katie that she died of, what was it? It was, she had some illness or something. I can't
remember. Cancer, I believe.
Cancer, yeah. But we've had that droid appear once before. Now I can't remember which one that was. Was it Rogue One? See, I'm losing my credits, my Star Wars credits now. Uh-oh. I can't remember which
movie. Or
was it
The Force Awakens?
Or was it The Force Awakens? Yeah, it may have been. Anyway.
I think that, is Katie not Alban Johnson's daughter? Is that not correct? Who founded the 501st?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think that might be true. Yeah,
I was thinking so. I tried to look it up, but I'm not. I think I'm wasting all my signal on the on the broadcast.
Maybe
right
you
now,
can ask the lady with the napkins. Maybe she.
Yeah,
knows.
she's back. So yeah, I could. Actually.
I thought I heard her. Oh yeah, there she is. I see her now. Oh, she's got a drink in her hand. Oh, and she's got a kid too. Oh, we can't disturb her then.
No, that's no. It's just one of those things. I also think right around the time we saw R2KT, I'm not positive of this, but I think we saw a Star Tours logo.
What?
I'm not
really?
Positive. I thought I saw it, but I'm not gonna go down swearing on that one.
Now, what scene exactly are you seeing R2KT and the Star Tours logo? You said it's early in the movie.
Yeah,
right?
And it's dark, and she's moving forward from left to right across. It's so funny because I can remember the image of it, and I can't place it in the scene. But she's literally going. I will tell you this: I think it's still on Corellia, and you know, last night I was taking some notes as I was watching it, and it's the note R2KT is the note I wrote right after I wrote Imperial theme major key. So I think it's right in there, you know, where he's hiding out trying to get off world or whatever. And I will won't swear, but I think I saw a Star Tours logo. That's what I'll say.
Wow. Okay. So we have to go back now and look for
now. We have to watch it again. Darn. Curse the luck, right?
See, this is so troubling because now we have to go back. You know, it's like, I can't wait. I'm going to see it. I haven't seen it with my family yet.
Yeah,
I don't know what day we're
going
to see it. Yeah, so now it's like, okay, I have to make a list of things to watch for.
Yeah.
I'll take it into the theater with me and just check off everything.
Oh, you can play like solo bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except I won't yell bingo when I win.
Yeah, please don't. Yeah, mad. Don't want to disturb.
I'll wait it. Until they reveal Maul and I'll go bingo.
You have to like Kira referencing Tarascazi. I think that's the first time that's happened on screen, right? On the big screen.
That's the first time we've heard that. Yep.
And what were your thoughts? Was it over the top? I hate you. I know.
No, that didn't bother. Didn't know. Because okay. I thought it was pretty
well,
natural.
You know, to go back to a term we were using earlier, I thought it was earned. Yeah.
Yes. Earned is a good way to put it. Yes, for sure. But then what'd you think about Rio Durant, the pilot with all the arms? What about him saying like, you know, I'm thinking of retiring and going to a hot place and open up a cantina. Is he the one who opened up the cantina on Alderaan? I mean, not Alderaan, on Tatooine.
No, he's dead.
Well, that's true. Duh. Well, no.
Did you see the movie, Bruce?
I did see the movie. I forgot. I just remember when it happened. I thought, oh, so he's the one who opens the cantina.
And then he drops dead 5 seconds
then
later.
Then he drops dead. So somebody stole his idea. They must have been listening in.
There you go. Maybe, well,
he must have been on Reddit and talked about it once.
That does
happen.
Took
that idea.
And then somebody steals it. That's exactly what took place. I can see that happening now.
But that didn't bother you, those kind of little Easter eggs, a little
again,
references.
You know, I think Last Jedi was so devoid of fan service that the heaping piles of fan service we got in this one were probably something that a lot of people wanted, and I think they probably recognized it was needed. I almost suspect, you know, because there was some rumor when they had the directorial change, you know, there was a rumor maybe they'll shift it back to Christmas, and they stuck with this release date. And I almost think that's one of the reasons to say, you know, we gave you one that was a little bit of a tough pill to swallow because it was very different and not very fan servicey. It was new, but don't worry, we still have these things too. You know, we kind of can serve everybody, and so those two being kind of so close to each other, one that's not fan servicey and one that is. I didn't mind it. I appreciated it. I thought it was a good compliment to the release schedule with Last Jedi just having come out a few months ago.
Well, and the movie hasn't even been out 24 hours since this recording, and I already looked on Rotten Tomatoes, and from the critics, it's not getting as good reviews as The Last Jedi did. It's still getting good reviews. It's just like 70%. But then the user reaction is at 54%, which surprised the heck out of me, because that's where things were with The Last Jedi, was in that 50% to 60% range.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, right now, there are a lot of people who are, and again, this is, I'm going to say something that probably nobody else is saying and everybody's going to disagree with, but there are a lot of people who are upset and disappointed by the content of Last Jedi, and I think they're, and some of them are now starting to kind of throw that back on Force Awakens, which I don't understand at all. I mean, Last Jedi was different and challenging. I think we all agree with that. Whether, you know, no matter what side you come down on, they're not just two sides to that one, by the way, also, because it's a movie that I have immense problems with and immense love for at the same time. But I think there are a number of people who are just kind of starting to try and close the door and try to say, you know, we've got to kill this version of Star Wars so that we can move on and get a different version of Star Wars, which is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meaning, if we can try to show that the users aren't and the viewers aren't liking these movies, maybe they'll do something different.
Maybe they'll shut it down and restart it. And, you know, there's still people still pining away for the EU to return. And, you know, I was a big EU fan, but at the same time, I also recognize 80% of those books were terrible. And I think only 60% of the new canon books are terrible. So it's, you know, it's starting to balance out a little bit, but. You know, it's one of those things. Again, I think there are a number of people who are just kind of, they're turning their back on the franchise because of some things they didn't like about some films, and they're taking it out on a lot of things. This is not a movie that made any bold statements. It's not a movie that tried to upset or offend anyone. In fact, this was a love letter to Star Wars fans, in my opinion. And if this one has got the ire of fans, it has to be because they didn't give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And Alden Ehrenreich, there was a lot of concern about him playing Han Solo. And I think, again, we like to say things being earned. He earned the right to play Han Solo, in my opinion.
He's not Harrison Ford. He'll never be Harrison Ford. And that's okay, because he was Solo.
Yeah, absolutely. He portrayed the character. He's not Harrison Ford. He gave it his own spin. But there were times it's like, you know, I'm like, this is Han Solo.
Sure.
And, you know, this feels like something Harrison Ford would have done in certain aspects, mm-hmm. in certain scenes. And so I thought he was perfect. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I thought he did just fine. I thought, you know, again, Donald Glover's fine. Those are the two guys that really have to sell it. Boy, Paul Bettany's had a terrible 2 months at the box office lately. I mean, he got his head ripped off and then, you know, got wiped out in this one, too. So I will say this, and I thank them for doing this, is, you know, one of the things Riley said he was concerned about was the checklist. And unfortunately, there were times when it did kind of seem a little checklisty. But one thing I thank them for doing, or for not doing, is when he's having his fight with Voss at the end, and Voss has got those blades going at him, that he didn't wind up cutting him on the chin.
Oh,
if that had happened, I was gonna give up. I hate to say I would have given it up on something so stupid and so little, but that would have just set me off.
Okay, so let me just point something out. I didn't notice this the first time, and now I saw it the second time. I'm near the front. I'm watching IMAX, so it's nice and big, but I'm sure you would notice this regardless if you're looking. But I did notice he has a scar. Alden had a little scar on his chin, like between the lip and the chin there, that little crease there. Mm-hmm. There's a little scar there. And I didn't know if that was just a natural scar that he has or it was something they put on him.
Is it a scar or is it the dimple? He does kind of have a dimple there, too.
No, it was like a little scar. I mean, it's a little smaller than Harrison Ford's, but there was one there.
As long as they didn't show him getting it in the movie, I'm okay. You know, as much as I love Jeffrey Boehm and Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, and it was fun. It's still a little troublesome that Indy got the bullwhip, the hat, the fear of snakes, and the scar on his chin in 10 minutes.
So, that's true, yes.
You know.
All his life-changing moments happened in that 10 minutes.
Everything happened in the first 10 minutes of this movie. And I was glad to know. That was the one thing that really worried me, was that they were going to do that. And fortunately, they did.
Yeah. My biggest worry was they were going to make some little snide reference to being, you know, Han shooting first. Something would be said, like it would be a joke.
They didn't say it. They did it, and it meant something when they did it.
Yes.
And I thought that was all the better. In fact, you know, they kind of undid the special edition change when you think about it, because what they said was, you know what, there's some times when he has to, and fortunately, at this point in his character development, he's willing to.
Absolutely. So for those who don't like the special edition, he's been redeemed here. He did shoot first.
Again, that's why I say it's a big, drippy, sloppy love letter to fans. Long time and short time.
Yes, and we are long time fans, and it worked for us. So that's a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. And again, we got to see some new things, and I was happy about that. The train heist still visually just blows me away. That was a thing, you know, again, I always like to see something new, something different, something we've never done before. And that was certainly something we've never seen or done before.
Yeah, that's exactly my thoughts too. Anytime I see a Star Wars movie, it's got to show me something different.
Yes.
Visually, something we've never seen before. Yep. And we've never seen a train heist. We've never seen a train like this.
Mm-mm.
Now, all of a sudden, we'll start to see trains like this all the time.
Okay.
But at least it's the first time. You know, it's something different and new. It's not a bunch of, you know, AT-ATs again.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I had no problem whatsoever with it. Enjoyed it immensely.
All right, Scott, well, where can people find you online if they want to hear more about your opinions on Solo?
Well, if you want to hear Star Wars-y things, I think the best place to go probably would be my Star Wars Story Twitter. I'm on Facebook under Ryfun. I'm on Twitter under Ryfun, R-Y-F-U-N. My talk show, my daily talk show, which is not geek-related, is on the iHeartRadio app in podcast form every day. So I'm all over the place. But speaking of my Star Wars Story, that's the podcast that I kind of put down for a little while. Almost a year, in fact. It's been about 10 months since we've done an episode, but I'll just say I'm currently producing an episode. And I'll leave it at that. You're the first people that I've said this to out loud. So,
okay, so we'll be looking for that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Very soon. Very soon.
So coming up, we have more reviews. We're going to have Mark Herleman in the house with Michael and Christy Morris. So that's coming up. We're not done talking Solo. There's still more to go over, so stay tuned.
Who's scruffy looking?
Luis, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
My question is, Darth Maul, go.
All right, so I thought it was really interesting how they were able to pull the Clone Wars, and not only that, since we already know what's going to happen.
Have you seen Clone Wars and Rebels?
Yes, since okay. we already know what's going to happen to Darth Maul and how he's going to end up at the hands of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Rebels,
yeah.
it's interesting to see how that tie-in goes in before he meets Ezra and the rest of the Phoenix.
Yeah, because the timeline's a little weird with that, but yeah.
It is, but no, yeah, he was still in control of Mandalore and the rest of the crime syndicates after, you know, during the Clone Wars, so it's nice to see how he's still keeping that up.
Let's talk to Tommy. Tommy, have you seen Rebels or Clone Wars before?
I've not, no.
Oh, so perfect, because then so what did you think of, like, suddenly, boom, Darth Maul's there with metal legs?
I thought it was a pretty quality cameo. I mean, not having, like, seen Clone Wars, Darth Maul has been sort of out of my mind for a while.
Yeah.
And I think it was a pretty solid yeah. twist there.
Yeah. So were you aware of Darth Maul, that had happened, like tangentially seen pictures of Darth Maul with metal legs, that he had survived, or was this you learning that, oh, surprise, he survived?
I'm a pretty casual Star Wars fan, so this was sort of like a complete surprise.
Oh, interesting. And so you liked it. Yeah, that was kind of what I was curious about, because if you didn't know that, that would be kind of out of nowhere. So, Calvin, what do you think of the movie?
Ooh, it was pretty good, actually. Not what I expected.
Uh-huh.
Quite a twist at the end, but I like how it ties some canon things together, or non-canon things into the canon now. So
not what you expected. That's kind of unusual for an origin story, right? Like,
It was very unusual. It doesn't go the traditional route where it just explains, like, you know, this is how he started and this is how he ended in the movies, but it adds a lot more to the story. Not only his story, but to the whole galaxy also. So
let's go around the corner. Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Jordan.
Jordan, okay, so surprises. That's kind of my initial thing of just, like, there's a lot of unexplored territory that I was not, I don't know, wasn't prepared for based on everything I had seen in the trailers. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for once they did a really good job of hiding key aspects of the film, hiding it away out of the trailers, and there was very, very surprising and pleasant surprises.
Now you've seen Alden now. How did he do? How did he hold up? Alden Ehrenreich, so Han Solo. It's not Harrison Ford, and that seems to be, honestly, like, most people going into this movie is like, I don't know about this, it's not, you know, they recast Han Solo, and how do you think he did?
Yeah, so at first I was extremely excited to see a Han Solo film, but the one issue I had was the actor. I was actually really doubting the actor and see if he could, you know, live up to Harrison Ford's role, but, you know, after watching it, he did an excellent job. I'm really pleasantly pleased, or very pleased with this film.
So, and he had the advantage of, it is a really different Han Solo, because we see him at a much younger stage and a much more innocent stage, which is kind of weird, but I think it built a lot. Yeah, we're going to have a lot more reactions. Thanks, appreciate it.
Of course.
All right, man, appreciate it.
This episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by Spiro. Now, as a Spiro, you can get an R2-D2, a BB-8, or a BB-9E droid that you can control with your own smart device. And you can get R2-D2 right now for $99. And BB-8 you can get for $79. These are really great deals. And we can actually do even better than that. When you go to checkout at Spiro.com/Star Wars, you can save an additional 10% just because you're a listener of the Star Wars Report. When you go to check out, use the code StarWarsReport10, and that's when you can receive the additional 10% off. Plus, you're also getting a free force band that helps you can control the droid. And these things are cute. You've seen them before, the little tiny R2-D2s and BB-8s out there. This is your chance to get it at a discount at 10% off. So we want to thank Spiro for their support of the Star Wars Report. And again, go visit Spiro.com/Star Wars. There is so much to talk about in this movie that we're not done. So we have Michael and Christy Morris with us. Hello, hello.
Hello.
And
hey.
We have Mark Herleman with us.
What's up, everybody?
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys the same things I ask Riley and that other guy, Scott Rifen. So
I thought Riley was the one that we refer to as that other guy.
Well, he is, but
he's,
I feel like
Riley
Scott,
guy.
Scott is of more importance now to me, so he's the other guy, not Riley. I'm just kidding. So anyway, I just want to ask you guys what I asked them earlier. What were you like going into this? What were your thoughts about Solo? So Mark, where were you before you went in to see it? I don't mean physically, like, oh, I was at home and then I went to the theater. Like, where was your head?
Where was I when the world stopped turning?
on that May Day? Well, I was kind of, you know, just kind of carefree going in. I really had nothing betting on this film. I kind of wanted to see Han and Chewie kind of get together, see Han get the Falcon, and just kind of see what they were going to put Han through paces-wise. So I ended up going by myself, because unlike the last Disney movie of Star Wars, they actually allowed me to use my actual privileges on it. I just couldn't take any guests. So I went on the first showing, and there was, like, nobody there. I was blown away. There was, like, 150 seats empty still. I was like, wow, this is surprisingly not as anticipated as I thought it would be. But that's kind of where I was. I was kind of like coming into it excited that there was another Star Wars movie, but I wasn't ecstatic because I didn't really feel like I needed to know this story. And yet by the time the film was over, I was glad that I learned what I learned from the story.
Okay. So I mean, I was going in with a very open mind. I wasn't going in with low expectations. I wasn't going in with high expectations. I was just going in thinking, okay, what have we got? Show me what it is. I'll, you know, and then I'll see what I think afterwards. So I didn't go in with an agenda of, oh, I want to see this, I want to see that. I just was hoping that they didn't do anything where they say, Han, look, you just shot first. Ha, 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 ha. That was my biggest thing I was against. So, Christy, where were you going into this?
I really was looking to just have a fun ride, honestly, because I know Harrison Ford is one of the greats of all time, in my opinion. And so I know immediately it's going to be hard to replace someone like that. So I didn't go in having this bad opinion of Alden right off the bat. I was like, you know, I'm going to give him a chance and see what he can do because I've never seen him act in anything else. He could totally blow me away. So I was waiting to see what I would think of it after seeing it. But I knew already that I had seen Donald Glover in many things on SNL. I'd seen him way back in the day on Derek Comedy and was really excited to see him do Lando, and it seemed from the trailers that he was really going to do it justice, so I was really excited about Donald. And then I knew Emilia Clarke, of course, from Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones? is that a work event?
That's a walk team.
Okay.
Anyway, Game of Thrones. Crones on the mind a lot.
So, Michael, you're a big, huge Lando fan. So
what? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, there's the bobblehead. There's the yeah, pop figure. That's me. So what? What'd you think going into this?
So going into the movie, what was on my mind was, holy crap! I got to get there. Gosh, Atlanta traffic! I hate you. Okay, run. What? You're gonna take my phone, and you're gonna wand me. What?
Oh, I didn't know they wanded you.
Yeah, dude, I got wanded in everything.
Now, this is for the press screening for those who are listening.
Yeah, they don't play around.
See, Michael was the one I invited, so I got a plus one. So I got there before he did, and they said, oh, well, you can go ahead and go in, sit down, and when your plus one comes, he can just tell us that, you know, he's your plus one. And so they said, you know, that I could take my phone in. They said, but we're going to have to take his. So I was in with my phone. So then Michael comes in, he's all sweating. He's like, oh, I'm so glad I got here. And I'm taking a picture of the screen because they had a still image of Solo on there. He goes, hey, wait, why do you have your phone? How did that happen?
Yes. Yeah. I was like, what the crap? I mean, they did everything but like do a full cavity search on me. Like, what's going on here?
Bruce got special privileges.
Oh, God. Went to a concert where it was like that, where they're patting everybody down, and then Wu-Tang Clan's like, everybody that's got it, pull it out. We're looking around. Everybody's lighting up pipes. Like, what the? Did you not go through the same line we did? What the hell? I don't want to know where you guys put that.
Yeah, we didn't bring pipes to Solo.
Well, you didn't.
One thing I want to start off with is just, you know, also, what did you guys, your overall impression, did you like it? Did you love it? Do you not like it? I mean, where do you stand on it, Christy?
Oh, I was 10 out of 10. I loved it.
Yes. 10 out of 10. Michael.
I say this is my favorite Star Wars film since Return of the Jedi.
Ooh. Ooh, that's really good. That's high praise right there.
That's right.
So, Mark.
I know. I'm like compared to both of their praises, like I couldn't even put it on a 10 level here in my mind because I felt like it was a very good film. You know, Bruce, we were talking before we started this recording. I didn't feel like it was like an excellent film or one of the best films, but it was a very fun ride. I definitely got a kick out of it. And I think, again, for me, that was coming back to I have been dissuaded of my love for canon Han Solo because of what's happened in the sequel trilogy. Now, I'm still liking that stuff. It's just that Han has gone from a character that I love the canon incarnation of to I really don't care for this version as much. And yet getting the backstory for this version of Han has opened up my eyes to liking the character more than what I was willing to give him credit for. You know, we were talking about how there's that line that Beckett had said about everyone betrays you and even Han's son betrays him. Like, I'm getting used to that fact that this Han is a very flawed Han as well. And yet watching how he becomes who he becomes, I thought that was a really fun aspect of the story. The way they played it off and they did the jumping of the time spans and stuff, that was all things I was hoping we'd see. Seeing him run into Chewie, seeing, you know, everything that as it progressed was great. I did have one moment of worry when we're in the Kessel Run. And Lando kept calling it the Maelstrom. And I'm just like, did we really just retcon the Maw? And then all of a sudden we see the Maw. And that was my flip out moment. Like, I was really loud in the theater when I saw the Maw. I was like, yes, it's still there. Like, and same with the Terris Kais. Like, there were a lot of little references and stuff that I really got a kick out of. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. But
yes, when she brought up Terris Kais, I was like, and I think, was it you, Bruce, who's like, what is that? I'm like, it was the best fighting game ever. No, what? It wasn't. It was it was not very good at all. But it was the first game I ever had for the original PlayStation, and I played the crap out of it.
Yep. No, that was a great reference. And I kept thinking that character, too. Like, I'm hoping we see more of that character down the road. Like, it felt like, even if it's just a Han Solo, there's a lot of significance about her and his relationship in their past. Like, I don't really want to put that away. Like, in some aspects, I feel like she's like the new Mara Jade.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one too. Why isn't Mara Jade in this? Oh wait, forget that. So, you know, every time it seems like a big movie comes out, like whether it's Star Wars or Marvel or DC or whatever, any of these types
No.
I'm just talking about like these. Like, it feels like anytime like a big movie comes out, the thing I always hear people say is, well, there are so many plot holes. There are so many plot holes. I hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. So when I was watching this last night, I kept thinking, okay, let me see if I can pick up plot holes. Now, I wasn't consciously doing it throughout, and I didn't really pick up any. Would you say this movie has plot holes?
I can't think of any, but that's mostly because the situation is most fans don't understand what a plot hole actually is.
That's what I think too. Thank you very much.
There's a difference between a plot hole and a something that may not be explicitly explained. A plot hole is when something about the plot is completely rendered useless, where it's sort of breaking of the story. So, for instance, if there's something that contradicts everything else in the film, if that makes sense. Sorry, I don't have my Webster's dictionary to exactly explain it. But for instance, okay, so the closest thing to like a plot hole that I would say is in the film isn't exactly a plot hole. They could have done it a little bit better, I'd say, but at the end of the day, I don't care because it's such a minor thing. But that is with Han outrunning Beckett at the
yes!
end.
I was just gonna say that. I thought if you didn't say that, I was gonna say that one. How did he get ahead
thing.
Of Beckett and Chewie at the end of the film there?
So my explanation is that he took Emphasis speeder bike.
Yes.
But, I mean, we do kind of see him walking back with Chewie. So that doesn't necessarily tread. Mm. And we never saw that bike. So it wasn't exactly explained, but that doesn't really make it a plot hole. Just because we don't know how he got ahead of them doesn't mean it was impossible for him to have gotten ahead of them.
Like when Finn and Rey had the jacket swap and everyone's like, well, the jacket changed. And then they're like, well, that's because there was a whole deleted scene where we show him taking it off and putting it on to her, but we cut that.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah, I know. I thought the same thing. Like, maybe he took a bike over and took, like, a long way, got off, walked over or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't really see any plot holes. But the more we see it, we might see some. But I don't expect people are going to start saying, oh, there's so many plot holes in this. But who knows? Because I feel like I hear that on every movie. But I'm just wondering, the start of this movie, we're on Corellia. And Han is a younger guy, and Kira's younger, about 3 years younger than what the core of the movie is. So what do you think of the first, like, 20 minutes of the film that takes place on Corellia?
My only thing is I'm bummed that he didn't fight a giant otter.
There was no Stallone references.
But he had Lady Proxima.
Mark's here, too.
He had Lady Proxima.
She was kind of like a giant water, like, she was like a shaved otter.
No, she was like a water centipede. She was disgusting.
And what was
with
the vampire-ist aspect? Like, here's some light. My face is burning. I was like, whoa, okay.
So you know what that scene actually reminded me of? And I feel like Mark would be the only one who would have played this game. Remember Soul Reaver? Legacy of Kain?
Is that on Super Nintendo?
No, it was on the original PlayStation.
Okay.
And you were, so basically, the story was, you were a vampire, Kane is the main vampire, and then you're sort of like his lieutenants or whatever, and there's like five or six of you, and they betray you for some reason, I can't remember, and you basically die, so then you become an even more undead vampire, but instead of sucking blood, now you consume souls. And your whole thing is, it's about going and finding all the other vampires, like all the lieutenants and stuff, and then seeking revenge. But they all kind of change and evolve over time because you've been dead for like a really long time. And so one of them actually turns into like this giant sea serpent vampire creature. And its whole thing is that in order to kill it, you have to actually bust out the stained glass windows, and it causes the light to come in and kill it. Yeah.
Well, that feels like direct representation now.
It's very similar.
Wow. Yeah. So they stole it from this video game.
It was a good video game, and I feel like it's one of those things where it was such a great video game, but it's kind of become forgotten. So
yeah.
To me, that's the perfect thing to steal from.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can't go wrong.
And see, I thought of Wizard of Oz. I'm melting.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. I'm melting.
But I will say, though, it is a credit to the creature work that they've been doing in all of these films that it grossed me out so much. I mean, I think that they did a great job.
Speaking of which, I think, even though I do like a lot of it, the creature work, I don't want to say creature work as much as the alien design. Mm-hmm. In the past few films, now there have been some great standouts, but all in all, we've been getting a lot of aliens that look the same and look pretty boring. This one I felt like actually had some cooler designs in it.
Mm-hmm. And they felt more Star Wars designs. Sometimes I see stuff, mm-hmm, and I'm like, that doesn't really quite feel like a Star Wars design to me.
John Favreau's character, I fell in love with that character right away. Bruce and I were talking before you guys got on, and I was not prepared for those characters to leave us so soon. I was like, oh, come on, little buddy. We'll get you back to base. We'll get you all patched up. And then I'm like, no, did they really, like, is he really dead? Like, slap him, Han, slap him. I was not prepared for that at all. I wasn't. And Christy, you had mentioned, you know, being okay with this version of Han. And I think the hardest thing for me going in was, I hadn't seen anything that the actor had done, but I just couldn't see him as Han Solo. It took a long time.
But can you now?
I'm still on the fence. There were a lot of moments where he nailed it. And the dialogue, 100%, the dialogue sounded like Han Solo. Whether his voice did or didn't in the delivery there, I mean, I felt like the words were something Han would have said. But when you think about like the Han Solo, or, you know, the Lando character and Chewie, like those were just absolutely bow-tied, done perfect. And I think for me, with my issue with Han, it all comes back to me having those issues and those preconceived notions that I was trying to let go. So I was trying very hard to hear Han, and I wasn't always doing it, but it wasn't enough to throw it off. Like Michael was saying, you know, I mean, it wasn't enough to destroy the moment for me or destroy that bubble of feeling like I was in the galaxy far away, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does. And I mean, I bought into it. I loved him as Han. I thought he did a great job. It didn't take me long into the movie that I started to just forget that he wasn't the original Han Solo actor, that, you know, I wasn't necessarily comparing him to Harrison Ford throughout. I just was looking at this guy playing this character, and there were times that he would do something or say something in a way that would send me a bit of a chill, where it would be like, ooh, that sounded just like that was just like how Harrison Ford would have done it, or he really felt like the character. But it's, to me, it's now just not any different than seeing somebody else playing Peter Parker in Spider-Man or playing Bruce Wayne in Batman. It's like, it doesn't take you long where that person becomes Batman or Spider-Man to you.
True.
Well, that's because prior to this, there wasn't much competition for Spider-Man, but I digress. you know, and the thing too is, because my biggest thing was, I didn't go, oh, this is the same guy that played him back in A New Hope. I was like, yeah, that's Han Solo, like 10 years earlier. You know, this is him before, you know, 10 hard years of living the outlaw life, you know,
where living with huts.
Yeah, take a toll on him, and you know, I'm like, yeah, I believe
that.
To
the point that he had gotten beaten up somewhere in his 20s, had some plastic surgery done to kind of clear up some of the scars, that he has a different look by the time you get to A New Hope.
Oh, I mean, well, they could take the legend story where he was doing the swoop bike racing with Dengar and have it where Han and Dengar wreck, and Dengar ended up with all the bandages and Han came away with a new face.
There you go. They're going to be in the next movie called The Mask.
Well, you got to think, because his face over time is going to look a little different. He's like, sorry, I punched your face. It happens more than you'd think.
Have you ever seen like somebody's photo from high school or sometime in like college or like in their younger years, and then you see them now and you're like, man, that doesn't even look like you.
Yeah,
you know,
few.
It's almost like that. I mean, sometimes you look at somebody and you look exactly the same. You just look older, but you look exactly. Then there's other people who are like, man, that doesn't even look anything like you. Oh my gosh, we're looking at a picture of Michael right now. That doesn't look anything like you. When? How long ago was that?
I was 21, so that was 9 years ago.
Dang.
Yeah, see, that's Alden Ehrenreich right there, and now you are Han, Harrison Ford.
He's battle scarred.
Now, I got a question for you guys.
I've been punched in the face a lot more than you'd think.
Was there any one aspect of this film that let you down at all?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I have one, but it's a very minor one.
Okay, the only thing I would say maybe that let me down... I gotta think about it. Does anybody have one before Mark tells us his? Because I can't think of anything that let me down.
Yeah, I legitimately can't think of anything, because honestly, even stuff that I would think, because I mean, obviously, like we said, I kind of like Lando. I'm like, as much as I hate to admit it, more Lando wouldn't have helped this film. Like, I think that they had the perfect balance for what they needed. And I love Lando. And I love Childish Gambino, you know.
Donald Glover.
Yeah, I really, in my, like, honestly, I want a solid Lando film. I do. But for this film, I think that if we would have gotten too much more of him, I think it would have been too much, and I think it would have taken away from the story.
Yeah, I think it was a nice level, nice blend of Lando. It wasn't too much, it wasn't too little, it was just the right amount for a Han Solo movie. I think the only thing I would be disappointed about, and this is very, very, very minor, is I guess I was kind of hoping there would be some reference or small cameo or something in the background that was Boba Fett. Like, he's lurking in the background.
Oh, I disagree so hard.
There was the Mandalorian armor in Dryden's office, though.
Yes.
Yeah. And I did not want Boba Fett in this film. Because
I'm not saying I really wanted him in there. I just wanted some, like, little Easter egg.
I just, well,
that, like,
me,
they could have said when they had that reference to Bosk, well, we could have got Fett.
Yeah, right? Something like
they
that.
They threw Bosk
yeah.
in.
Oh, there you go. There's Christie's disappointment. That just reminded me of it.
What?
With, I don't think Christie likes, oh gosh, I can't think of his name
Beckett.
Now. Beckett, yeah.
Because I am Ara Singh, and he said that he killed me.
Her, you should have seen it. She looked like an angry little 5-year-old girl.
I was like, what?
She puffed her cheeks out and crinkled her nose like, I don't like that.
But you were happy later about it because she was actually mentioned.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and she goes, she got mentioned. I'm like, well, yeah, because they said she's dead now. And she's like, yeah, I didn't like that.
Okay. But so, Mark, what were you disappointed about?
Well, it's an easy one because, you know, I've always said trailers will throw you off. And that's exactly what it was. In that line where Chewie's flipping the switches and Han's like, you're 190 years old. And Chewie goes, rawr, rawr. And you're like, you look great. They changed Chewie's response. It was no longer "I'm not good," which I was expecting that. I was looking forward to that. And he's like, what? Why would you change that? Why? That was such an awesome moment.
They redirected Jonas and ruined the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was ready to walk. Mark.
You have different Chewie dialogue going on. Now, wait, what's the difference again? The one in the trailer sounds like what?
The one in the trailer makes it sound like as he's saying it in Shrywook, like he's saying, I look good. And then Han's like, you look great. Like,
oh, but instead it sounds like
just like, oh, man, Chewie, what the hell? Did you really just call him that, Chewie?
But now, did you like the reveal of Chewie as the beast?
That was awesome. Like, you know, the fact that we got a different Imperial story for Han was cool. I mean, you know, in Legends, he was a pilot. And then this one, he got denied being a pilot. I thought that was kind of great. But when they said throw him in with the beast, I was just like, oh, that's got to be Chewie. And you know, like at first, like I was like, okay, it sounds like a Wookiee. Maybe it doesn't sound like a Wookiee. Is it a Wookiee? I don't know. And then we see the arm and I'm like, is that Wookiee hair? Is it tentacles? Like the way they presented Chewie in that muddish pit, that worked great. I was questioning it all the way up until he actually came out. And I was just like, watching him throw Han around, I was like, this is awesome.
Is it just me or were they using some like Rancor sounds? To start
they might
with.
Have been.
So that's what I thought at first.
Yeah.
I was going, oh,
I
maybe
think
it's
that's
a
what they wanted to put in your mind. Mm-hmm. So I will. Here's actually, after really thinking it over, here's one thing that I don't want to say let me down, but I would have actually enjoyed seeing a little bit more. I think could have fleshed out some of Han's story a little bit more. I would have liked to have seen more of his time in the Empire. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to seen, which I get it. I get why they did it where he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a pilot. And then it just cuts straight to him like on the battlefield. So I get that. I would kind of like to have seen, him like what he did to get kicked out of the academy. Cause I feel like he probably wasn't listening and probably like, ended up banging up like a really expensive, you know, TIE interceptor or something like that. And he's like, yeah, but I did it. And they're like, you completely destroyed this.
They're
ship.
Like, you never follow directions. Yeah. And that's
it's
why
it's a right. pre-flight checklist for a purpose.
But I would have kind of liked to seen a little bit more of that Memban conflict, mm-hmm. you know, to actually see what they're fighting and sort of see. Cause I mean, even if like it would have been, you see them achieve their goal and then just see, you know, sort of a disenfranchised Han at that point, which, I mean, we get that, but I would have actually liked to seen it of, you know, I'd kind of like to see just like a bunch of like just dead bodies lying around. And then they're like, oh, we found, you know, we got it. And then it's just like, really? That stupid thing, you know, it's for some Moff's pride or something like that, you know, that they went and got some stupid little trinket or something, you know, mm-hmm. and then him just been like, man, screw this war. something like that, maybe, I think would have been improved. But listeners maybe be like, what? That would have been a waste of time. Shut up and let the pretty girl talk.
Who, me?
No, Mark.
I'm kidding. I will say my one minor drawback, other than mentioning the Ara Singh thing, the obvious one for me was I felt like we didn't get enough of the villain. I felt like Paul Bettany's part was a little bit limited and that I would have liked to see more of him because of the service that was done to Snoke before. I guess maybe I was a little more sensitive to, like, you know, I want to actually explore more of the villain and not just have him killed off before we learn his background or how he got involved.
Mm-hmm. No, I was talking to Bruce before we started recording about how I started to notice, like, his thumbs had these really weird points to him. And then
he
I was like,
a point of thumb, but nothing else.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe he's not human. Like, maybe he's like a near human. Cause I thought those marks on his face were scars. But then when I started to see those thumbs, I'm like, maybe those are like zebra stripes. Maybe he's just got striped face or
like
something.
Like, he's a different species.
I noticed the exact same thing, Mark.
You know, Ron Howard directed this and he played Richie Cunningham in Happy Days where the Fonz would hold up his thumbs. They should have done that. With
he wanted Paul Bettany to go,
well,
hey.
And another thing, if you notice, when he gets mad, his eyes become extremely bloodshot.
Did you notice that? That was
really weird.
I did
notice that too, yeah.
I thought they were probably shooting late at night, and the actor was just like needing some sleep.
He's like, I'm so tired.
Well, and then when he died, if you noticed, it was sort of like his character in Infinity War, where his face
grayed up
color.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I noticed that too. So yeah,
I was also telling Bruce before the show that there's a lot of those aspects that this movie really worked in a way that even Rogue One didn't. Like, I came away wanting to know more about all the little details and stuff. You know, what set things in motion, what put the people where they were, what put these people in power. And Kara's character especially, like, they still played her really close to the vest. Like, there's a lot of the things that she did that I'm like, you know, like, I on one hand, I want to like her. And on the other hand, I feel like she's got a sinister aspect that maybe we'll get more out of. I kind of like to see her come back and factor more into Han's story at some point.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and because I told this to Bruce. I think everybody immediately writes her off as, oh, she's a bad guy after all. We don't actually know that. We don't actually know her motives. It may be her motives. Her motive may be, yeah, I killed Dryden, but I know that we can't get away. So Han, once again, you go, you get away. But I'm gonna stay, and I'm actually going to go after Maul because I know that. That's what it would actually take. Like, you can't just take out Dryden. You have to actually take out Crimson Dawn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean,
we discussed
that could
this earlier in the episode with the other guys, Scott and Riley.
That sounds like something Scott would bring up. He's a smart guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, they both actually brought it up. I think Scott did. That, you know, is... because he's the smart one. Because,
of course.
Because...
Riley.
The question was, you know, is she good or bad or whatever? And yeah, I think, and I said then, you know, there's some gray lines. The other thing that they brought up, which I thought was interesting, I'm interested to hear what you guys' opinions are. So, Mark, they were saying about Enfys Nest that the reveal was kind of a disappointment for them. Was that a disappointment for you?
I was confused. I was like, wait, so was that the same person at the beginning of the movie, or did her mom die somewhere along the line and she took over? Like, I don't know if I missed something. Like, it didn't feel like a big reveal to me. It was just kind of like a little bit of misdirection, which didn't feel too misdirected because I didn't know who it was in first place. I kept thinking, who's Infant's Nest? You know, like, who's this infant they're talking about?
Right.
But see, that was the same thing with the Aurora Singh line. Like, I didn't catch that was Aurora Singh. I just thought it was some other new name. And I was just like, oh, I want to know more about that.
Right. So my thoughts on it were, I think it's cool and everything. I think the way they did the reveal, or at least what, you know, we were expecting. I think we were expecting, you know, as being Star Wars fans, oh, they're taking the mask off. Here's the big reveal. Here's who it's actually going to be. And then we go, I have no idea who you are. You know?
Boba Fett!
Because what it was supposed to be is, oh, look, this is actually a child. you know, this is actually a young girl. Mm-hmm. And I figured that out on the second time, but the first time I didn't. And the reason why is because of the actress's, I guess, heritage, you'd say, or whatever. Like, basically, she, because what she kind of looks like is that she might be the child of, like, Val and Beckett, you know? Because she kind of has, you know, a little bit darker skin, but she seems to have, like, red hair, you know? So I was like, oh, is that supposed to be...
And a lot of freckles.
Yeah, I'm like, is that supposed to be, like, his daughter?
See, that's interesting, because I think in Star Wars, we're conditioned now to think everybody's connected in some manner.
Right, right.
Well, like I said, immediately was thinking, like, is this when we saw the Two Tubes character, right? And they get the fuel, and it's like, okay, well, you're basically helping the rebellion. I'm like, is this supposed to be part of Saw Gerrera's group? Like, is this one of those Two Tubes?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I think, and this is what's so cool about, personally for me, like, some people may not like it because they may want it more clean cut, but I think that it adds a lot more shades to the rebellion. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense too, because it was like 18 years of tyranny from the Empire. So of course, you know, that's going to cause different cells to kind of come, you know, stem everything. And then especially with Rogue One, we know that it's essentially the rebellion was these like fractured groups that would sort of come together and have meetings, but never actually do anything. But you know, some cells would go do something, and then others would want to try to handle it in a different way or whatever. So to me, like, I think it's kind of neat to think, oh, you know what, this is like one of the early predecessors of the actual rebellion that we know. Yes. And that because, you know, they talk about the five worlds or whatever, that basically the different species, because you actually see several different ones. Like, you actually see a Rodian, and, you know, because they talk about they were all from the same or different planets or whatever. So, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, maybe Two Tubes is like, nah, this ain't getting it done. I'm going to go with Saw. He knows what's up. Mm-hmm. And you actually see where, you know, what evolves into later on, but this is sort of that early beginnings of the rebellion.
Yeah, it's like there's different mm-hmm. factions of the rebellion. That's one thing that we've really started to pick up on Rogue One and the Rebels series and now this movie, where they all eventually may come together, or there's different groups that still stay separate from the core of the rebellion. And I love the reveal of it being this young woman, and it's something you just wouldn't expect. And you know, especially with the power that they had, and they're just such like a ragtag group. And even Weasel is in that group from the Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he actually had a few speaking lines. I was like, good job. Like, way to really let Warwick have his Warwick day, Davis, you yeah. know? Mm-hmm.
And Warwick Davis was directed by Ron Howard in Willow back yep. in the 80s.
Which they're looking to see about making a sequel to.
Yeah.
Which I will go see.
Yeah.
I love me some Willow.
I will too. Maybe they can get Val Kilmer to come back.
God, I hope so. He is so good. If anyone has... Listen, if you haven't seen it, go watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It is the movie that got Robert Downey Jr. the role as Iron Man. And it is wonderful because nice. Both Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. are amazing in it.
Nice.
No, I haven't seen that, so yeah, I'll have to check that. I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever seen it yet. So.
Next time you're over, I'll let you borrow my copy.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, you know, next movie I see is probably Solo again for the third time, because my kids and my wife haven't seen it yet, so we still yeah. have to. I still have to take that. Every Star Wars movie lately has been the same way. It's like I see it one or two times, and then I have to take the family to go see it. So I usually within the first week have seen it three times.
Yep.
So I'll probably be seeing it here real soon. How many times do you think you'll go see Solo, Mark?
Well, so when my pass are 100%, I can use what I get. I can take two people with me, but that's paused right now for 3 weeks. So they're not going to get to go and see it for 3 weeks unless we decide to pay for it, which my wife's usually like, no, we're not going to pay for it. So like she just saw Infinity War last weekend. So she waited on that one. So she's willing to wait on this one. So I will probably be at least watching it 3 more times. Four, because I'll end up probably taking my dad and my mom too. That's where for me, like with every movie, if everybody in my family wants to watch it, I'm watching it 3 or 4 times, and I'm like, please let this movie be good enough that by the 4th time I'm still okay with it, you know. So I don't think that's going to be a problem with this one. You know, it was a fun ride all the way around. The reveals and stuff that they had, Michael, I believe you said it was going to break the internet. So I kept waiting all the way through the film. I'm like, they say it's going to be in front of my face. Like, was that it? No. Was that it? Like, no. And then we get to it. And I immediately, like, my brain melted for a second because, you know, Lucasfilm, they've been going out of their way not to, like, tie anything down with the timeline point. So it's like, he's alive? He's supposed to be dead. Wait a minute. Wait, Nathan. I get on the phone immediately. Luckily, he had just seen it too. I'm like, dude, tell me the timeline of this. Is this before or after Rebels? Because I was starting to freak out. Like, because I went out and other people, that was the thing. They were saying, like, isn't he dead? Like, that character's not supposed to be alive. And I'm like, well, no, like, if this is set before Rebels, maybe we're okay. And then turns out, sure enough, it was set before Rebels. But I think because Lucasfilm has been playing so loose with the timeline that a lot of fans were in the position I was where you thought this was fitting wasn't where it was fitting at all. So I had a momentary panic.
Well, I actually think it's a little more than that, Mark. I think that a lot of people, because your thing is you're going, okay, where does this fit, you know, amongst Clone Wars and Rebels and everything? But everyone else is going, where does this fit amongst the films I've seen, you know? Because yeah, a lot of fans haven't seen those. And that's why I said this film did something extremely gutsy and awesome and definitely for its fans. And they basically said, hey, have you been watching Clone Wars? Have you been watching Rebels? This is for you. Anybody else equivalent who hasn't been, you're going to be confused, but deal with it, because this is for the fans who've seen those things. Because, you know, like everybody's talked about. In fact, Bruce has said several times, like, oh no, the shows aren't going to, you know, like basically they're almost a lower canon or what. I don't know what your verbiage was, Bruce, but you know.
I don't know. It wasn't quite that. But yeah, that's basically what I'm getting. Yeah, because I would think for the general audiences, because this is my concern with that appearance of Maul, the general audience will get confused because you're taking from Rebels, where most people haven't seen Rebels, or from Clone Wars, haven't seen that, and they're not going to understand why Maul is there. But then I thought, okay, well, they'll just assume somehow he survived or whatever, or they'll look into it. The other thing I was concerned about after seeing that in the movie was, is this going to be the focus of discussion when the people see this movie? Because this is a movie about Han Solo, and there were times where I heard people who saw the early screening, that's what they primarily were focused on, was Maul was in it. Can you believe Maul was in there? We got Darth Maul, blah blah blah. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is a movie about Han Solo, and we're talking about that 15 seconds of the movie that has nothing to do with Solo himself.
But it has a lot to do with Solo, because the whole point of them getting that refined fuel was for Maul's faction of the underworld, which we know Maul later is, you know, building up a Mandalorian army and stuff. But to me, I think this reminds me of with Legends, with Luke going to the dark side in Dark Empire, right? That happened in the comics, but it was referenced in the books. And so everybody's like, well, what, you know, when is this event going to show up in the books? And they're like, it's not. You want to read it, you got to go to the comic. And yet, It was always an integral part of the Luke Skywalker story that he did go to the dark side, and he came back from it. He was stronger for it. And yet, to get that, you would have to go back and read that comic. So I like the fact that it does force people that would be in that, no, film-only camp, it's only films, it's got to be films, anything else doesn't count. It forces them to actually, if they want to engage in the full story, they have to go and check those out. And, you know, I'm sorry if that twists your arm, but, you know,
but Star Wars, at the same time,
more than that.
If they're going to put Maul in a movie like this, to me, that means Maul's going to appear in another movie. I mean,
see, yeah,
it's not just gonna be that's it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I do think that what they'll do is they're gonna have an upcoming film that will kind of give you that backstory for the people who haven't you know, who haven't been watching that stuff. So we won't need it as fans, but I think they probably will kind of add something into that film.
A Lord of the Rings opening.
Maybe not so much that, but they may sort of explain, you know, it may be kind of in a bit of dialogue or something. I mean, who knows? It depends on how they're going to go with it. But to me, it really makes for, to like, seeing, I'm like, I want to see that movie because I want to see, you know, he's basically, he set up his criminal empire on Dathomir. What? You know, like, that already sounds awesome. And then knowing from Rebels that, oh, okay, now he's going to go, he's going to end up being afraid of Vader. Does that mean he's going to have a lightsaber fight with Darth Vader? Yeah, sign me up. I want to see that movie. You know,
like, yeah, but you know, neither one of them are going to win. None of them are going to get killed. We already know
that. Well, there's a difference between getting killed and losing. I mean, Luke didn't get killed in Empire, but he definitely lost.
Don't you wish, though, that they would have not killed Maul in Rebels so we could actually see that on screen, maybe even between him and Kenobi if they make a Kenobi movie?
No, I'm good with it. I liked what we got, and I think that, like I said, I do want to see him versus Vader, and I think it would be very cool. And I think that he's going to, you know, it's like a bad guy, like a Sith. He's going to be like, oh, no, never mind. I bit off more than I can chew. Bye. I'm out of here. I'm going to go hide out in this underground Sith temple, you know. I'm completely fine with that. And I want to see something totally different out of the Kenobi film. I want to see new things that we haven't seen before. And, yes. And we haven't really seen, you know, Sith versus technically former Sith, I want to see Obi-Wan like taking on a crate dragon or something.
Yeah.
See the stuff dragon that they alluded to but never explained.
Yeah. So,
which is sort of what we got with Han in this movie. You know, it was stories that we had heard about happening in Han's life before A New Hope, but had never actually seen explained.
Right. Not on film, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, before this movie, I would have never said this, but now I'm convinced that we will see Ahsoka in a movie at some point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, this blew open all the doors. And the thing is, too, and I love Marvel, but even Marvel hasn't gone this far because there is nothing in the actual Marvel films that you had to watch, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to get.
Yeah.
Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will sort of bend itself to the Marvel films, but the Marvel films, you know, there's no leeway for that show.
We got to bring Quake in for this one scene.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but this time, if it's like, wait, why is Maul still alive? Well, go watch Clone Wars, you know. I can't think of anything that's ever actually done that before.
And do you think that's because they were too afraid of losing people?
No, I think that this was a risk. You know, I think that, what are you saying? Losing
that it hasn't
people
been
by...
done before because
oh, right. Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
writers
yeah
were afraid
yeah
of losing
and
people.
And like I said, I think this time Lucasfilm's like, nah, just do it. We're Star Wars. They'll come back.
I'd do what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Rogue One kind of pushed that envelope by them forcing, you know, well, they're not even forcing. It was done relatively brilliantly with the Rogue One crew, or not Rogue One crew, the Ghost crew, with Hera showing up, Chopper showing up and all that, seeing the ghost flying through and stuff, which brought that focus back to, yeah, we do have TV shows out here. We're putting on this great big story. But there are a lot of fans out there that, you know, whether Legends changed over, whatever, they were just like, you know, this, I'm jumping off. This isn't my cup of tea. But maybe they liked Maul, and maybe they didn't realize all this stuff was going on with Maul. And maybe now they're like, hey, you know, what is this stuff? And if this piques their curiosity, that's a brilliant move on their part.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, the ghost, like, if you didn't know that Saw Gerrera was a character in the Clone Wars, if you didn't know about the ghost or Chopper, none of that impedes your enjoyment or understanding of Rogue One. This film, however, if you don't understand why Maul's alive, you're going to be scratching your head or doing like a lot of people in the two theaters that I've been going, wait, didn't he die? How is that? And then you hear the other person go, Clone Wars. Oh!
Yeah. I'm curious if when my wife sees this, because I don't know if she knows Maul is alive or not. So I'm curious to see, and I haven't told her anything, so I'm curious to see how she reacts. But we are running low on time, so I want to go ahead and hit final thoughts. So Michael, what are your final thoughts on Solo?
So my final thoughts are, I absolutely adored this film. you know, I said it in the opening that this is my favorite film since Return of the Jedi.
You and Paul Bateman, he said the same thing.
That's me and, you know, once again, another smart guy. You know what? I think I need to get with him and Scott Rifen. We need to just do our own show. I can't even explain. I mean, it captured a lot of the original trilogy feel, excitement and adventure, and then also expanded the galaxy much in the way of like those 90s games and books and you know, and then even getting into some elements of the prequel trilogy and everything. And I felt like it bridged all of that so well. And I was just like, I am so glad this film exists. I'm so glad this was a thing, because it did it so well. And not only that, but they even have their Easter eggs in there to say, yeah, those books you like, we read them. Check out this giant crystal skull in Dryden's office. That look familiar? That's right. We got you.
Right. So, Christy, your final thoughts.
Sure. So I end up a lot in the same camp with Michael about really enjoying this movie. And I felt like this film really had obviously a lot of tie-in stuff to things outside of the films, and then had a lot of fan service in a good way that didn't feel blatant. It felt like nice, subtle things added in to add to the overall feeling of this movie. So I feel like when you walk away, you really feel like it was a group of people that came together and said, we want to get back to the roots of why people love Star Wars. And we want to really explore all of, like I said, the stories about Han that we heard of how he got the Falcon and who everyone agrees shot first, and actually show people how it got there. So I really enjoyed it. And like I said, there was maybe one minor drawback for me. And I think that Alden really did Solo justice. And I don't know if you guys saw the clip that I think Entertainment Tonight did, where Harrison surprises Alden while he's in the middle of an interview.
Yes, I saw that.
But it was so sweet.
Get out of my chair.
Yeah. But it was sweet because after he said that, they said, how do you feel about how Alden portrayed Han Solo? And he goes, I think he was brilliant. He just absolutely gave Alden his blessing. So I think that's where everybody needs to be in the mindset with this, is just give him your blessing and go in for a fun ride and you won't be let down.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mark, what do you think? And do you give Alden your blessing?
I'm looking forward to more stuff with Alden. I think that's one of the things they need to do, is now that you've got a new Han Solo, use him. Han Solo is a character that everybody loves, and his story's told. This is the only way you're going to be able to tell this character's story. And that's something I've said back in Legends, like when Anakin Solo died or Mara Jade. It's like, let's go back and tell some of these other stories. Let's fill in some of the gaps and stuff. So if they do that with Han, it'll be exciting. I also like the fact that they had Sam Witwer as the voice for Darth Maul. I thought that was kind of cool.
We're totally seeing.
And I also think about the fact that if you take Episode 3, you take Rogue One, and you take this, and you've got a better prequel trilogy than we had before. I think that's kind of cool. So they're definitely doing a lot of really good things in the prequel era. For me, with this movie, I think you get the most out of Han's relationship with Chewie, Han's relationship with Lando, and Han's relationship with the Falcon itself. I think for me, those are the big payoffs. I love the fact that we saw L3 in that character and have her integrate herself into the Falcon. That was something I was hoping that they would do. So when that moment came to fruition, I was like, yeah, you know, like it's nice when the service is something you're hoping to eat, you know? But I agree. So, I agree on the aspect of all the fan service in this was done smoothly. You know, I mean, like with the Teres Caius, you know, it was all just so blended in. It was like Ross out there painting happy trees, man. Like I was down for the picture that was being painted. I'm looking forward to going back and watching it again. I still don't know if I would say it was one of my favorite movies. I mean, it's a good movie. I don't see any plot points or anything that jump out at me. I definitely had a smile on my face all the way through it. But sometimes I kind of felt like the first half of the movie was probably a little more my jam than the last half. But then again, I think that there was a lot of things in the last half that I still quite didn't understand. Like, and a lot of that's with Kara. Like, I want to know more, and I don't hold that against the movie, because a lot of times when there's a story or a movie that has me wanting to learn more about other things, Bruce and I were talking about that. That's my favorite payoffs. I mean, Centerpoint Station, when they brought that back in the New Jedi Order and they started using and filling out the mysteries that was set up back in the Centerpoint Station, the crisis back on Corellia and all that stuff, that was huge for me. I really got a kick out of that. So if they come back and do some of these things, or if they bring Maul back later in another movie, like, I think that will be the ultimate testament to this film's placement when they build off of that later going forward, because right now it's just a good film, but it could be the bedrock for something great.
Well, one thing I know Bruce is like, you're killing my time. Sorry. It's not like you got to edit it, Bruce. but one thing I will say that maybe if you want to talk about like blatant in your face type of fan service, the one that I would say I was kind of like, yeah, but I let it go was they don't even serve our kind here.
Oh, yeah.
That yeah. was a little bit, I think that was a little unnecessary. And it was a little too much of a callback just for the sake of being a callback. But,
yeah, a little.
I'd said, I can't remember if I've said it on this show or not, but my biggest concern going into the film was actually L3. Because I knew nothing about her. I thought she had an awesome look. She very much looks like Lebo from. Mm-hmm. Shadows of the Empire. So I was all about that. But then we hear her speak and she has that British voice that's like heavily modulated. And I'm like, oh, she sounds exactly like Captain Phasma. And not that I have anything against Captain Phasma, but it just sounds too similar. So I'm like, that's going to make me think about that. But I was so wrong. I absolutely adored L3 in this film. I think she had the biggest laughs in the two times that I've seen it.
Yeah.
And she just had such a huge bombastic personality, and her one-liners were so funny, you know, where it's like, can I get you anything? Equal rights. I mean, just like,
oh, that was
once you pop that up. So funny.
And so in my head canon, you know, I think that Captain Phasma's mother helped program L3 and used her own voice.
Or maybe she's the product. Maybe she's the daughter of Lando and L3.
It could be, yes. Now we know the backstory on Captain Phasma's parents.
I do have to throw in, I loved when L3 said to Kira, you know, at one time I thought about it, but no.
Yeah, she's like, and we could. You're like, that's that whole pansexual reference they were making right there.
Because right.
Someone's shipping L3 and Lando.
Aliens and droids.
Finally, someone explains it to me.
Well, I'll have to just say real quick that, I mean, I love the movie too. It's not my favorite Star Wars movie, but I really did enjoy it. And I think one reason I would say it's not my favorite Star Wars movie is because the thing that's missing from this movie is the whole, you know, the Force and the Jedi and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, that's something I always look forward to in a Star Wars movie, but I don't want that and don't expect that to be in a movie about Solo. If anything, this movie reminded me of the old Solo novels that, you know, and comics and all those things. And so it really worked well for me. It was just like seeing one of those Brian Daley novels, but up on the screen, or the A.C. Crispin novels, and just seeing a movie version of something like that. So that was really exciting to me. So I really enjoyed it. And I'd say, you know, I didn't give it out of 10, but I'd say
I can't do it.
I don't know.
It's too hard to put a number to it.
It would be high.
Like 5 doesn't feel right.
No. I'd say, you know, I guess the one thing I have to see it again. I do have to see it again, because the more I think about the train heist and them, in the Falcon, there were just times that I don't recall feeling that adrenaline going that I would get in other Star Wars movies. Like, you know, in Empire, when the Falcon going through the asteroid belt, I remember just like, I felt like we were flying through it. This didn't quite feel the same. Maybe the way it shot. I don't know. I
love the intensity of when they're sitting there, and it's always like, oh, great, we got to do this. Oh, that's a giant eyeball of some beast. Is that the Maw? No, that's a creature. And then, you know, it's like, oh, that's the Maw. It's a gravity well. And, you
it's
know,
like
it just, there's so much tension.
On Naboo. It's like Naboo.
Well, you've got to remember, Bruce, the Falcon was newer at this time, so it may have been a smoother ride.
Well, that could be true, yes. I don't know. That's why I feel like I have to see it again. When I think of the pod race, I remember feeling like that was really, like, that got my adrenaline going, but the train heist didn't for some reason. I mean, I thought it was exciting, but it didn't affect me in the same way. So I'm just wondering if it's the way it's shot or if it's maybe because there's too much music. Like, I like how George will not have music for a while and then build up to the music later. I don't recall if the music's constantly playing through all these scenes or not. But anyway,
that's the one thing I wanted to touch on before we go, too, is the music seemed very subtle. It was like only every now and again you'd pick up on some of the classic John Williams, you know, scores and motifs. And then you would notice it. But for the most part, it was so nondescript that I barely even recognized any of the music until there were those moments.
I think that was intentional with the fact that it's not John Williams doing the score. I think that they tried to play it down a little bit and then bring when it would kind of hit its most John Williams-y is when they would kind of ramp it up a bit.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because that was when I noticed it was when we were hitting like when we had the Imperial March playing on the speaker for the Come Join the Empire.
it was so good.
Yeah. But I was surprised, though, all the way around. Like even Rogue One, like that, the score kind of moved me in a way where I was like, and the music. But with this one, I was kind of like, yeah, the music. I mean, they did good when they did it, but there was nothing that really jumped out as this is the sound. More so, the signature sound came from the trailers.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the music was really different in trailers. I bought the soundtrack today. I haven't started. Well, I did listen to like the first tracks, but I haven't had time because I've been doing a lot of recording and stuff today. So
and
I'm
traveling.
Hoping to listen to it over the weekend. So, well, I mean, that's the end of the episode, and since Michael's editing, you know, this is where the music comes in. You know, this is where we're playing the music. Here we go. So, so Mark, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to have on the show next week, because you have something special you did.
Yes, I was able to sit down with Daniel Jose Older to talk about his new book, Star Wars Last Shot, the one that chronicles the adventures of one Han Solo, his pal Lando Calrissian, and their ship. Their ship, meaning both of theirs, because it jumps from time frames. It goes from a now to a 10 years ago to 15 years ago to even a 20 years ago as you find out more about the villain of the story. But yeah, it's a really fun interview. I got him really charged up. It was a lot of fun. Had to go back and edit some things because we got really candid at some points. But it was fun. I really look forward to sharing that with everybody.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And even on that same episode, we're going to do a discussion. We'll have a few guests on to talk about how Solo fits into the overall Star Wars universe and where all the connections are with Rebels and Clone Wars and the EU and all that stuff. So, Mark, you didn't even know that, but we're going to touch on that. So that's going to be exciting.
A sinew discussion. I love it when the things are connected.
Exactly. And Michael and Christy, tell us where people can find you on other shows or online.
Sure. So the number one place you can find me is co-hosting Galactic Fashion with Teresa Delgado, and that's on the Jedi News Network. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Galactic Fashion Pod, and you can find me personally on both of those platforms at Bespin Bell, and then I do occasionally appear on the 602 Club talking about Star Wars and other geek films.
And I think you're going to be on this next episode of 602 Club talking about Solo.
I will be.
All right. So,
so I get to talk about it a lot.
Yeah, that's coming out real soon. Michael, what about you?
Well, since I didn't get invited on the 602 Club, thanks, Matt.
Don't worry, sorry. I'm not either. So I was supposed to be on the last episode about Last Shot, but then I had a business conflict.
And then Bruce
said, I could just
usually
see the email to Matt now. What's this inviting my wife to?
It's like, thanks, dude. I thought we were friends. So you can find me, I do the Cloud City Casino podcast with a one Nathan P. Butler on the Star Wars Report Network. But you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram as Morris Isley. And then maybe some more here. I'm gonna kill Bruce, and then I'm going to hit the little hologram thing. And then the guy's going to take his little hood off, and it's Riley.
With metal legs.
Yeah. Where'd you get your metal?
All right, and you can find Mark on Twitter at IllogicalRogue2. You can find me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. And that's about it, right? So this is where we're fading out and saying, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. Yes, yes, yes. We can keep talking if you guys want. The editor's here. We can keep this in. Or
I know. I just looked and I'm like, it's an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, my stupid.
Oh, that's enough.
This is only
we could go for another 20 and triple this, because wasn't it always supposed to be a half hour?
Well, I'm thinking. Thank you for riding Star Tours. Bye-bye.